No Visible Scars. Coming up next, right here on The Right Stuff.
You are listening to the best, the only place to be on Tuesday night. That's right, you're listening to The Right Stuff, and you're at the right place at the right time. From England to Canada, from Detroit to the Coconuts, we are showcasing Christian authors worldwide, giving you tips, tools, techniques, and resources for you, the writer, to hone and perfect your craft. Tune in every Tuesday at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, right here on WPJC 104.5. And your host, Parker J. Cole.
Hi, and welcome to this edition of The Right Stuff. I'm the queen of Tuesday nights, Parker J. And you know what? We're going to have an insightful, very invigorating show for you today. We're going to be talking about domestic abuse, and we're going to talk about it in all its different forms. If you know someone who is going through this situation right now, just take the web address of this show, write it down, put it on your Facebook, and just share it with them. And then when they have a chance and they can read and listen to what we have to say, I hope that this becomes just a beacon of light to them as they deal with the issues that surround domestic abuse. When RJ reached out to me, I was so excited to just host this show because RJ always is looking to add empowerment to women who have lost their voices. And she does that so well through her writing. A lot of her writing deals with encouraging people, particularly those who are caregivers. But then she switched it up now to domestic violence. And if you know someone who is dealing with domestic violence, by the end of this show, we're going to give you just some of the things that you can do to help that person. And hopefully, of course, pray, of course. But this book, No Visible Scars, has so much information that is going to bless you. And of course, if you're in a dangerous situation, please do not stay in that situation. Do whatever you can to get out of it. God does not want you to to death do us part if someone is hurting you. And I could tell you that for certain. But before I get into our topic, I just want to thank you all for your support of my newest release, Wanted Fire Chief. Your response to that book has been absolutely phenomenal. My next book comes out June 14th. It's part of the best-selling Pinkerton Matchmaker series called An Agent for Camille. For those of you who are familiar with the series, I know some of you are excited to hear that. That's coming out June 14th. I'm so thankful for all my readers who have been very supportive. You know, you've helped change my life year after year with each book that you buy, so I don't take that lightly. Now, I have been telling you about the Southern California Christian Writers Conference. How long have I been telling you about this? I've been telling you about this for some time. And guess what? It is almost here, June 20th through the 22nd at Hope International University. If you are a new author, if you are a seasoned author, this conference is for you. Whatever you want to know about your career, you definitely want to get it at the SoCal CWC. So make sure you register at SoCalCWC.com, that's SoCalChristianWritersConference.com. As always, if you want to weigh in our conversation, you know you can by calling in at 646-668-8485 and then press that 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter, Parker J. Cole, hashtag WriteStuff, with your questions and comments. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We'll be right back after these messages.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guests on The Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
If you are an author looking to gain visibility for your books, then authorshout.com is the place to go. We have a wide variety of affordable products and services to include a member zone that will help you get the word out about your books. Our team here at authorshout.com specializes in creating stunning digital products to include book banners, teaser videos, book trailers, book covers, and a whole lot more. So what are you waiting for? Stop by authorshout.com today and let our team connect you with a world of new readers.
The Speculative Fiction Cantina is your weekly hypodermic injection of science fiction, fantasy, horror, alternate history, and things weird and wonderful in the world of books and writers. You'll hear from writers who bend the rules and drive the narrative. We ask authors the hard questions. We do the show in our pajamas. Join S. Evan Townsend on this journey over the rainbow and through the looking glass. The Speculative Fiction Cantina on RightStream Radio every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern.
We're back, and you're hanging out with the queen of Tuesday night, Parker J, and her guests right here on The Right Stuff.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. So glad you are here with me today. We are talking about a very sensitive but very important topic today, talking about domestic abuse, domestic violence, violence against women, and violence against men for that matter. So all of the above with this wonderful book, which is fictionalized but so very true, called No Visible Scars. It's written by my good friend RJ Thesman. And I think RJ has been with the show. She's been coming onto the show probably since I first started the show 6 years ago. And it's always so exciting to have RJ on here because she has so many insights into how to teach you boundaries for yourself, how to empower yourself and find your voice. A lot of women have such a hard time, yours included, yours truly included, you may not believe me, but yours truly included, to find their voice, to say no, to say I don't want to do this, to say I'm not going to do this, to say you have to treat me a certain way. So she's really good at empowering women to be the wonderful women of God that God has called us to be. And without further ado, I want to reintroduce to some and present to others RJ Thesman. RJ, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing well, and thank you so much, Parker, for this opportunity to talk about a subject that I think is so vitally important.
You know, vitally important doesn't even begin to kind of just tap the issue of this, because domestic abuse, it's interesting because even though the Me Too movement has done a lot to help women find their voices, it's also driven some of that voices down too. Like some people are being forced to be more quieter. It's actually very interesting how that works. Mm-hmm. And so with domestic violence, and particularly your book, No Visible Scars, you take one woman's journey into, first of all, finding her voice and then finding her boundaries and then mm-hmm. learning how to lean on God for support. And you mm-hmm. do it in such a wonderful way. I was telling to our listeners out there, I was talking to RJ before the broadcast, and I had read her book this morning. I read the whole thing this morning. I was late to work and everything because that's how quick this book reads, and it's a beautiful book. So I encourage you to go ahead and get your copy mm-hmm. of this book today. It's available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. So RJ, go ahead and introduce yourself to our listeners out there.
Well, thank you, Parker. I am a writer. I'm also a writing coach and an editor, and I'm kind of a generalist writer because I do nonfiction as well as fiction. But I love to write about cultural issues that affect women, particularly helping women understand, you know, as you mentioned, that we have a voice and we need to learn to use our voices, you know, not to put down anyone else. Not necessarily even to be competitive, but just to realize our value, that God loves us, and that we are His daughters, and so that makes us important, and to learn the importance of the word no. It is actually a viable word, mm-hmm. and how to set those important boundaries that protect our hearts and may end up actually protecting our lives. Mm-hmm. This book, No Visible Scars, actually has been on my heart for over 20-some years. I actually wrote it first as a nonfiction book because I was running into so many women in my coaching practice and as a biblical counselor that were going through domestic abuse. Now, There is a difference between domestic violence and domestic abuse. And, you know, everybody knows that you shouldn't hit a woman. And even perpetrators know they shouldn't hit a woman. But domestic abuse can be so very subtle where you're not mm-hmm. getting hit physically, but you're getting hit emotionally, mentally, mm-hmm. verbally. And those are the types of situations that make it even difficult for women to move from a state of denial into actually realizing what's happening.
It's interesting that you say that, because I was talking to a young lady at work about a year ago, and she said something to the effect of, I would rather get hit in the face by a guy than have emotional abuse, because she was talking about her past pain that she had gone through. And I said, why is that? She said, because at least if they hit you in the face, you can see it. She said, but when they do that mental stuff, she said, it gets in your head and you can't get it out of your head. And so when in our story, No Visible Scars, that's one of the reasons why our story, Abigail, has such a hard time trying to figure out if she's actually a victim of domestic abuse. Because one of the things that her husband does, he doesn't hit her, he doesn't slam his fist into her, but there are instances where he grabs her very hard, or he'll pinch her wrist, not pinch her wrist, but squeeze her wrist, and she has bruises on her body, or he'll yank her hair. And at one point in the book, he yanks her hair so hard, patches of her hair comes out, and then she has to cover it up, which may want to go through the book, by the way, but she has to cover it up, and, you know, so no one can see that this thing. But she said, well, it's not so bad. So with Abigail, we have this woman who is dealing with domestic abuse that is not, quote unquote, quite physical. And it's a hard place for a woman to be, because at the same time, in the book, her husband is, quote unquote, a good provider, because he does make money. He did get the house. She doesn't have to worry about security. So what is some of the things that you showcase in Abigail's character that you've met during your work as a biblical counselor?
Well, one of the things is that, you know, even when he's not pinching her or something like that, he's putting her down. When she makes a statement, he acts like she's being stupid, or like her comment really doesn't mean anything. He controls her life. He controls how she dresses. He goes with her to shop and makes sure that she chooses what he likes. He will only allow her to wear certain things to work. He won't allow her to go out with friends. He's very jealous. He controls all the money. She gets an allowance. Then he watches to see if she's spending extra money anywhere. He destroys some of her objects. He teases her. He calls her names in front of people, accuses her, you know, of being too sensitive, or, you know, the one that women hear so much is that, oh, you're just overreacting because you're a woman, or you're just being too emotional. You know, those kinds of things, which, that yes, they get into the head. And those are the things that that stay with women even longer. And those are the things that also kind of contribute to this whole idea of a woman saying, well, you know, he's not that bad. He's really not hitting me. But yes, it is bad. It is bad, and it's not right.
Exactly. And what I liked about this particular story is that Abigail is going through a journey, but she kind of, when she's going through this journey, she's making mistakes and she's doing things maybe she's not supposed to do, but it doesn't matter, because this journey is all about self-discovery of who she is as a woman. Tell us why this particular theme in the story is vital for women to break free of a domestic abuse situation.
Well, because what happens in abuse, it like I said, it's a very subtle thing, and it happens over a period of time. And over a period of time, these women, their self-esteem has been destroyed. So they don't think that they have any power. They're afraid of exhibiting any power. And sometimes when they try to say no, he comes back at them even harder, even worse. Of a situation, and you can see that in the book where he almost gets afraid as she starts to exhibit her own strength, because he realizes that he is losing control, and so how he treats her kind of escalates throughout the book until it comes to the very climax.
And boy, I am not going to the climax, guys. It's amazing. I would not say the climax, but it was it definitely is. That's why I encourage you to get this book today. You'll be just like me. You'll be late for work. Honestly, you'll be late for work. So but go ahead, finish your thought, RJ.
Well, yeah, just the idea that that women who are caught in this kind of a situation, and I say caught because they certainly don't start out that way. You know, they mm-hmm. fall in love with this guy. They walk down the aisle in their beautiful white dress thinking that, you know, life is going to be good. And a lot of these men are, as you said, they are hard workers. They're good people. They're involved in the community. You know, this particular guy, Nate, he's a deacon in the church. You know, these are good people on one hand, but on the other hand, they have had some kind of a hurt in their lives that they have never dealt with, and what they do is they take out that hurt on someone that they can victimize, and often it is the spouse, and as you mentioned, it isn't always. I mean, I'm using him as the bad guy because that's how the book is, but it isn't always that case. You know, there are mm-hmm. situations where the women are actually the abusers, and the men
yeah.
have to deal with that. And it not only does it destroy their self-esteem, but it really attacks their ego, you know, as men. And so mm-hmm. it is just a vicious, horrible cycle. The whole thing, but it doesn't have to be that way. You know, we can learn to set boundaries. We can remember who we are. We can be empowered, and we can exercise our power and our authority and get out of those situations. But the first thing we have to do is admit this is really abuse.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing you mentioned, and I'm only going to mention this other book because that book that I'm about to mention was not a Christian book, whereas yours is definitively a Christian book. Mm-hmm. But I saw some similarities in that, not today, but when I read her book, this other woman's book, one of the things that she said was how subtle it was. Because I remember mm-hmm. thinking, before I read her book, I remember thinking, how does a woman get in this situation? You kind of think mm-hmm. like, you know, especially if you know this woman to be a very strong woman, you think, oh, she's strong. She won't let herself get into this situation. And in that particular book, the woman said it happened so slowly. It was mm-hmm. small little things that he did. Like in the beginning of this book, in No Visible Scars by R.J. Thesmond, in this book, he calls her insipid. And I'm mm-hmm. like, insipid? You know, you kind of sit there, and then all of a sudden, it's a mind game again because she can't get yeah. rid of the word in her head. Like, it's a small little bitty word, you know. Don't be stupid. Mm-hmm. Stop acting mm-hmm. stupid. It's just these small little words that get into your head, you know. And in this, yeah. in that way, in this other book I read, it started off with, oh, I need to something. I can't remember it now. But he said something to the effect of, I need to show you how to do this right or something like that. And she said,
yeah.
it was then that a piece of my soul was taken. But she didn't realize it at the time. And that's a secular book. I can't think of the name right now. That's a secular book I'm thinking of, whereas mm-hmm. it's in the same thing. So there are certain patterns that domestic abuse situations have. And one mm-hmm. of the biggest things is control. Another thing you mentioned that I want to talk about before we go to break real quick, another thing you mentioned was the fact that these men tend to have good work ethics, if you think about it. And that mm-hmm. was another pattern I noticed. Like in this book, he is very successful because he's driven. He's mm-hmm. literally driven to be successful because he's trying to prove something to himself. And he's trying to show whoever he's trying to show that I'm the big dog or whatever, you know. And
yeah.
he is a standing upstanding member of his community. Even his mm-hmm. job dealt with assisted living. It dealt with creating
right.
a beautiful environment for assisted living, even though they had caveats. And that's something to get to in a minute. But it had a helpful thing. Like he was doing this to help other people out. And so that is the dichotomy of some people who are perpetrators of domestic abuse. On one hand, they have a good ethic, a work ethic. They're driven. They're very successful. On the other hand, they're extremely controlling. They're extremely they try to break your heart a little bit, and they try to control mm-hmm. every aspect of you. And so that's just some of the few things that I picked up from reading No Visible Scars. RJ, go ahead and tell us another aspect that, that perpetrators have that shows that dichotomy of good and bad.
Well, and again, you know, such a subtle thing. One of the things is that these people are incredibly, tend to be incredibly intelligent. You know, they really are smart people. And so they can figure out ways to come against their spouse, or it doesn't have to be a spouse, it can be girlfriend, boyfriend. They can figure out ways that it's kind of like when we say they knew which buttons to push. And that's exactly what they do. They push the buttons that that affect these women. They know exactly how to hurt them. One of the other issues is that they use it's called gaslighting technique. And a gaslighter is a particular type of manipulation. And these are the people that they twist words so effectively that it makes the woman feel like it's all her fault. You know, so they'll say things like, you know, early in the morning they'll say something like, "Okay, I'm gonna pay the bills today," and then later on in the day they will ask the woman, "Did you pay the bills?" And she'll say, "No, you said you were going to do that." "Oh, no, I didn't. You were supposed to pay the bills." And so after amount of time of going back and forth with that kind of situation, she feels like she's a little bit going crazy. And so, you know, it's an amazing manipulation. But again, these are smart people. They are, you know, respected in the community, and nobody really knows how insidious this situation is, and how scary it is, how easy it is to, you know, to play along with this and to get by with it for so long. And particularly then, if this person is settled in a church, a leader in a church, that makes it even harder, because those are the guys that they know Bible verses really well, and they know, and they use them against the women. You know, they say things like, you know, "God says that the man has to be the head of the home. So you have to do everything I tell you to do." Or they say, "God says in the Bible," Ephesians chapter 5 is probably one that's used more often than others, you know, that the woman has to submit to the man, you know, forgetting the verse right ahead of that where we're supposed to submit to each other. So they know a lot about the Bible. They know a lot about relationships, but they also know how to use them in damaging ways. And so, yeah, it is, like I said, the word insidious keeps coming to me, because that really does explain. But it also explains why sometimes it's so hard for women to understand this is actually happening to me, because it is so tricky, and it sounds, you know, like it shouldn't be this way. And then, you know, for women who have been raised in a church, they have heard this all their lives. You know, you have to submit, and the man is the head of the home, and no matter what, you know, you pray for them, and you need to be a quiet woman and pray for your husband, and then things will get better. Well, not necessarily.
And for those of you just tuning in, we're talking to RJ Thesmond. She is the author of the book No Visible Scars, and this deals with domestic abuse. if you know someone who is dealing or in a domestic abuse situation, do what you can to help them. You can, of course, pray, but also provide them with resources, give them a number to call. If you yourself are in that situation, and you have to know one thing, you don't have to stay in that situation. You don't have to stay. You do not have to stay. And there are resources and there are people who will be willing to help you if you so feel that need. If you want to weigh in on our conversation, you can call in at 646-668-8485 and then press 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag write stuff with your questions and comments. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guest on the Write Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
Are you a reader looking for more compelling Christian fiction? Maybe something a little more edgy or a bit more real? Are you tired of most Christian fiction shying away from the truth and settling for a rose-tinted view of the world and its issues? Or are you an author who has a compelling story to tell, but you're afraid it doesn't jive with today's brand of Christian or secular fiction? Are you tired of Christian publishers telling you that your content is too edgy? Or maybe you've tried submitting your content under the radar to secular publishers, only to be told your themes are a bit too religious? We invite you to take a look at the Crossover Alliance. We are an online publishing company that specializes in edgy Christian speculative fiction with Christian themes and real-world content. Our company is formed from authors and readers just like you who are breaking into the mainstream and Christian markets with this compelling genre. Head over to the www.thecrossoveralliance.com for all the details on who we are, what we do, and what we accept. Right now, if you sign up for our email newsletter, you'll receive a free digital copy of our first short story anthology. Check us out today and help us spread the word about the Crossover Alliance, where light shines brighter in the darkness.
We're back, and you're hanging out with the queen of Tuesday night, Parker J. and her guest, right here on The Right Stuff.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. I'm talking to my good friend, RJ Fassman. She is the author of the book, No Visible Scars, a book that deals with domestic abuse and domestic violence. And I'm so glad, RJ, that you're here with me to talk about this very sensitive topic. Before the break, we talked about how women who grow up in church hear certain things all of their lives, and you're listening to someone who has heard that all her life. Men are the head of the household, men are supposed to lead in the household, all this other stuff, yada, yada. And mind you, I believe there's caveats to that. I know there's caveats to that, and as I've gotten older, I don't know if I don't know if my mom's listening to me, so I'm trying to be careful how I say this. So I get it, but I don't think that situation works for every relationship out there. There are some people who are naturally, and I'm not talking about domestic violence abuse or abuse like that. There are some people who naturally can see to someone who's a stronger leader in the relationship and others who tend to lead better. You know, I think it really based on the relationship with those people and that those people's personalities. But at the same time, you hear this, you know, put your husband up, you know, hold him up on his pedestal. And the thing is, the church effect on domestic violence is something that we have to look at. When it's done right, if I can say it this way, RJ, and please correct me where I'm wrong, when the church is right, it is the most empowering place for a married couple to thrive, when the church is right. But when they are wrong, it is almost as worse as anything it could possibly get, because now you're blaming God for the fact that your marriage is in this situation. And so I want you to talk about the church effect and how it affects domestic abuse and domestic violence situations, particularly when it comes to scripture.
Okay. Yes, you're right. You know, when a church operates well, biblically and relationally well, it can be the most beautiful type of a family that you can be a part of. And there are many churches that do that well, and there are many church leaders that do it well. And you know, one of my concerns in writing this book was that I did not want to vilify every church or every pastor. But I will say that I have, in my experience through the years, I have run across so many situations where you know, I'm sorry, but the pastors are just clueless, or they are definitely adding to the abuse of these women. You know, for example, without, of course, naming names, and I'm kind of changing some of the details to protect people, but a woman who was thrown in the basement, treated like a dog, had food thrown down at her by her husband. He was a deacon. When she finally got out of the basement, she did go to her pastor and told him what had happened. And he said, well, if you'd lose 30 pounds, he'd like you better. You know, that certainly doesn't help her to find empowerment. That doesn't value her as a woman. So not a good thing. But, you know, and there are still, there's a lot of people with the mindset of, as long as you're not being hit, you can work through this. And and I will say, there are some couples who do work through it. But in order to work through a relationship like that, you have to have both parties willing to work, and you have to have the abuser totally repentant so that, you know, he can work on these issues. So, I mean, I would even ask the question, when was the last time you heard a sermon preached about domestic abuse? You know, it doesn't happen. And yet we hear so many sermons preached about the role of women being submissive to the man, and that there has to be a hierarchical authority in the home. So, you know, the perfect relationship, of course, is the one where everybody uses their giftings. You know, if she's great at math, well, maybe she should be paying the bills. You know, the perfect relationship is where they work as partnership, which is the way Adam and Eve were created before the fall. You know, and they work as partners, and not only in the home, but also within the church situation. So, you know, our churches can do a lot to help alleviate this problem, because not only is it affecting women, one out of four women are living in destructive relationships, and that includes women in the church. But it also affects the next generation, because when children watch this happening, you know, they learn how to mistreat each other. They don't learn about healthy relationships. And so the next generation then just repeats the same problem over and over and over. And, you know, it also goes back to, you know, to religious traditions. So it's not always just a Bible verse. Sometimes it's a tradition. You know, there are... I grew up in an extremely conservative religion, and years ago, men sat on one side, women sat on the other side. Women were not allowed to be any kind of leader in the church, no matter what kind of leadership gifts they had. And so, you know, all of that just plays into this. And so I think our church leaders really need to, first of all, they need to be educated in what domestic abuse really is. You know, they need to call in some counselors and listen to what the counselors say, and have training. Our seminaries, in seminaries, they need to be trained about domestic abuse and how to deal with it. But then, you know, the leaders of the church, the elders, whatever, they need to gather together and say, okay, we need policies here so that everybody knows how we need to be reacting and acting toward the abuser as well as toward the victim. And I recently had an email conversation with a pastor, and no, he was all about, yes, we know this kind of thing happens, but we need to give grace. Well, yes and no. You know, grace is, of course, a biblical principle. And when we fail and we are repentant, then certainly God gives us grace. But there needs to be some sorrow for our mistakes And if this person, this man or woman, whatever, is not even sorry for what they have done, then how can there be grace? Then just give them license to continue to live that way and to act that way. So, you know, there needs to be consequences. I watched one time, and this was years and years ago when I was young and stupid and didn't really know, you know, a lot of things that were happening in the world. But I can remember very clearly having dinner at a pastor's home, and I watched him belittle his wife in front of all of us. And I watched her turn red and quietly go back into the kitchen because she wasn't going to speak out against him, of course, in front of all of us. And so, you know, just these little things like that can be handled, need to be handled in the church, need to be addressed, you know, and the Me Too movement taught us, is one of the things that taught us, when you bring the truth out, then you can start dealing with it. And so we need to stop being silent about this horrible thing that's happening. We need to bring it out into the open and talk about it and talk through it and devise policies and solutions, even in the church, and educate people, youth groups, you know, all this. There needs to be education. There needs to be the truth needs to be told, because we know it's the truth that sets us free.
You know, it's interesting, because the church is a place of healing. It's a place of growth. It's a place of development. And this situation here, it's horrible when it turns out to be someone you trust. Like, he's a deacon. In this book, he's a deacon at the church. And one thing he was very good is when he, as he controlled his wife, was projecting a certain image. That was one thing he was constantly harping on, was the image. And if you think about it, this is that interesting dichotomy when it comes to some of these people, is the fact that because they know how things are supposed to look, they do everything to make sure it looks that way. And even in his mind, like, for example, with the Christmas, there's a scene in there where she's getting ready for Christmas, and it's very over the top. But everyone's like, oh, the Christmas is just gorgeous at your house. And he's just laughing it up, laughing it up. And she's like, oh, gosh, you know, but he's going to get mad. Well, the bell fell over here. Oh, this fell over here. And I'm looking like, why don't you pick it up? And, I mean, I'm hollering at this book like, why don't you pick up the stuff? Why does she have to do it all the time? And one thing I loved about Abigail was that, and it was, just so our listeners know here, as you read this book, it's very interesting how you almost feel for Nate, which is her husband. You also feel for Nate a little bit, not much though, but you feel for him a little bit, because there's a devastating thing that happens to him in the book, and I literally was like, oh my gosh, what a shocker, you know? And I'm sitting there like, if I was his, well, I'd be devastated, because he worked his tail off, and he worked so hard. And you think, you know, if he could just take that and put it into his marriage, if he could just take that instead of being so focused on him and being focused on the marriage, you know. Like one thing in the book, Abigail, she likes to wear colorful clothes. She did not want to be an executive assistant. She wanted to be a teacher. And one of the reasons she wanted to be a teacher was because it really connected her with her mother. And that's why she wanted to be a teacher so bad. And so here we have a situation where he is strangling her dreams because he wants this perfect image. Okay. We did get a question. I missed this real quickly. We did get a question from R.D. Palmer. R.D., thank you for your question. R.D. says, how can a wife get help for the husband without the husband getting upset? The husband may have walls up, so what are some good ways, places to help the husband? And he says, possible example, have the wife ask the husband to read No Visible Scars? And that's a question from R.D. What's your thoughts, R.J.?
Yeah, that's a very tricky thing. I would say another great resource is LeslieVernick.com. Vernick, V as in victory, E-R-N-I-C-K, LeslieVernick.com. She has an amazing blog that has all kinds of information. And so, you know, if he will sit down with you and just kind of look through that information. But the other thing is, you know, sometimes, again, if he's one of these controllers, then he's going to be afraid of losing control, and things may actually get worse. And that is when the woman needs to be strong enough to say, okay, we are going to have a separation for a certain amount of time. This does not mean we're necessarily going to go through divorce, but it's going to give you time to think, and it's going to give me time to think. And this is, again, where the church could come in and help. I don't know if there's a church involved there in the questioner's life, but, mm-hmm. you know, this is where elders could come alongside this man and say, okay, hey, you know, let's look at this. Let's see if you and your wife can learn some things together, because boundaries can be a mutual type of a situation. That's the way we want it to be, where it's a mutual respect. And so, you know, if the wife is afraid that the husband won't accept this truth, then she may have to set an even harder boundary so that he is forced to address the issue. And that's where it does get a little bit dicey, a little bit scary. But again, you know, in Abigail's case in the book, she had a group of women around mm-hmm. her in this boundaries group where she met, and they helped to strengthen her and helped her realize that she could use her empowerment to do what she needed to do. And so, you know, one of the dangers in an abusive situation is isolation. Mm-hmm. You know, and so if you're isolated, you need to find places that are helpful. You know, I knew of a lady that her husband would not admit that there was even a problem. You know, he mm-hmm. he wouldn't go to counseling. He kept saying, oh, well, you know, we don't need to work on counseling. We have a perfect marriage. He wouldn't go to the pastor. He wouldn't do anything like that. And so finally she just called the police and said, mm-hmm. would you send an officer over here? Because a lot of times the police have been trained. They deal with a lot mm-hmm. of domestic violence. They've been trained, and they know how to deal with it. Would you just send an officer over here just to be the other person in the room so that my husband and I can talk through this? And they did. They sent an officer mm-hmm. who was very, very good. And so that was kind of like an aha moment for the husband. And then he realized she's really serious about this, and we're going mm-hmm. I'm going to have to do something to help work through this. Now, that husband was willing to work mm-hmm. through it. Mm-hmm. There are some men who won't. They won't work yeah. through it. And that's where women have got to make a choice and say, you know, my life and the life of my children are just as important as his life. And I have to step up to the plate here. And again, this is where churches can help. You know, is the church willing to help support this woman to help her find housing, to help her with finances, to help her with the children? Is the church willing to help? That's a big, big, huge thing. And again, there's a Bible verse there: take care of the widows and the orphans. Mm-hmm. You know, churches like to talk about that verse when people adopt children. And again, I have nothing wrong with adopting children. I think it's wonderful. But that mm-hmm. verse also applies to women who need help. Mm-hmm. There are different kinds of widows. There are different kinds of orphans.
Mm. You know,
I hope
RJ.
That helps. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, it did. I'm pretty sure our listeners listening in, and I see a few of you are on are listening in today via telephone. So if you want to weigh on the conversation, feel free to just press 1. We'd love to have your thoughts. One of the things you said, RJ, that I was thinking about it was, well, I should say this. One of the things that happened in this book is that we get a glimpse of Nathan's mindset. And what had happened was that he had been abandoned by his father. And I want to talk about that very briefly, because just as the mother is important to a child's development, the father is just as important to a child's development as well. And so mm-hmm. with that abandonment, now he doesn't have anyone to help him with these feelings. Tell us about how that abandonment helps, in a sense, to create the type of personality that happened. I even remember reading about a gentleman, he works with men who are abusers. He has a mm-hmm. podcast out too. He works with men who are abusers. He's been in jail, all this other kind of stuff, and why men are so angry, where the anger comes from, stuff like that. And one of the things he said is that these men have been abandoned by their fathers.
Mm-hmm.
And not, of course, not all of them, obviously, but they've been abandoned. So why was that such an important thing to put into your, even though you did a quick blip of it, there's a very important reason why you put it in there.
There is. And I devoted an entire chapter to Nate's viewpoint, did kind of a backstory on him. And it's interesting because in some of the reviews that I've gotten and in some of the emails I've received from women, they said, you know, thank you for including that chapter because it helps me understand a little bit why someone would become an abuser. So what happens in abandonment is it sets up attachment disorder. And attachment disorder, people who adopt older children, they study about this. You know, attachment disorder, what that means is that you are constantly longing for that person who abandoned you. And for little children, it's called mommy searching. Like a little child will go from woman to woman searching for mommy. It's incredibly sad. But for abusers that have abandonment issues, the attachment disorder, what that means is that they can't deal with, they cannot attach in a healthy relationship unless they work through it with counseling and a lot of help. And so, you know, abandonment means, first of all, it means betrayal. It means grief. And it also means why did dad abandon me? Is it my fault? And for a lot of young people, they do. I mean, you can tell them 100 times this is not your fault, but they still take it as their fault. You know,
yeah.
If I had been a better kid, he wouldn't have left. Something wrong with me, or he wouldn't have left. And so then there's that constant hole in the heart. And when there's a hole in the heart, they try to fill it with something. So they fill it with work, or they fill it with church, or they fill it with community service, or they fill it with self-medication, or they fill it with multiple affairs. They try to fill that empty hole where that father has left. And, you know, if there's one thing that men can do for their families, it is to stay and to be faithful, because that affects the next generation in just incredible ways. Yeah, there's actually a phrase that runs around the internet all the time. You know, the best thing you can do for your children is love their mother. You know, so that's what happens in abandonment. The attachment disorder takes over. And so they're going to, they're not going to have healthy relationships. They don't know how. They don't know how to be faithful husbands. They don't know how to emotionally attach to their wives. And so they easily can fall into abuse.
You know, that was one thing about Nate's character, before we go take a quick break. That was one thing about Nate's character that I found interesting, because I didn't get the impression that he would ever cheat on his wife. It was the weirdest thing as I was reading it, and that may not have been something you intentionally put in there, because like you're the writer, you're so close to me, not. But I was going to say, I don't think he'd ever cheat on his wife. And another thing was that he was still attracted to her. He was still attracted to her, because there's a couple of things from his point of view where he is attracted to his wife. You know, he acknowledges that he got what he wanted. He got the looker that he wanted, the trophy piece that he wanted. He acknowledges that.
Yeah.
But part of me feels as I felt like there was a, like had a lot of these things hadn't happened, he probably would have been an insanely good husband to his wife. That's what I got the impression from. And just because the abandonment from a father just changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I mean, it changed a good boy into a bad boy, because he has so many good qualities. He was a smart man. He knew how to get stuff done. He was driven. All these good things. And I thought, like, just one person in your life, that one person that just cares, and to have that completely gone, you know. And thankfully, though, and I like the, I mean, yeah, the acting was not that great, but I like the movie Courageous, okay? I like the movie Courageous because in Courageous, one of the things he's, the one character in that movie, he says, you know, that God gave him someone to act as a father figure to him. And Nate didn't have that. His grandfather and his grandmother, they weren't really what he needed, you know. He needed someone to be a father figure, to step in and be that father figure. And so, yeah, that was just an interesting tidbit to this, too. When we come back from talking about No Visible Scars, we're going to talk about the support system that Abigail had, because this support system gives us an idea of what we can do if we are cognizant or aware of someone who may be in a domestic abuse situation. And I want to talk about that when we come back from the break. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guest on the Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
Have you read the latest issue of SOARMAG Digital, the award-winning literary magazine for multicultural readers and writers? SOARMAG Digital is available quarterly and showcases interviews with the best authors in multicultural literature. SOARMAG Digital features craft and business articles for those interested in writing. If you're looking for a good book, check out our book reviews on what's hot in multicultural literature. For writers looking for new readers to get in front of, SOARMAG Digital is the perfect place to introduce your book. We offer advertising spaces that fit your promotional budget. Get your free subscription on SOARMAG.com. or order a print issue on magcloud.com. If you would like more information about SOARMAG Digital, check us out on SOARMAG.com or contact us at SOARMAG@yahoo.com. SOARMAG Digital is the magazine for multicultural readers and writers.
We're back, and you're hanging out with the queen of Tuesday night, Parker J, and her guests right here on The Right Stuff.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. Again, so very, very glad you are here with me today talking to R.J. Fesman. She's the author of the book No Visible Scars, and R.J. is a prolific, wonderful writer who is helping other women to find their voices. And R.J., once again, thank you so much for being with me on the show talking about your book No Visible Scars. In the book, one of the things that really impressed me was Abigail's support system. And I think for women, I think everyone needs support systems, don't get me wrong. But I think for women, it's vital, because women can encourage women in a way that's very unique and that's very sisterhoodly. Just like when a bunch of men get together and they have that brotherhood, women have that sisterhood, you know. And I love her best friend, Cassie. Her best friend, Cassie, she made me laugh. I felt like I wish I knew her. I could go out to coffee with her. I mean, her best friend really showed her love, even when she was trying to impress upon her, look, if something's wrong, you need to let me know. She let her know that she was in her corner. Why was that? I think that was one of the most important elements of your story, is having that friend there, because almost as you were using her friend as a way to tell people, if you're aware of this, this is what you can do to help that person out. Go ahead, tell us about her support system there.
Well, you know, and Cassie, I put Cassie in, first of all, about the support system, but also I felt like she gave a little bit of a comic relief on an extremely heavy, intense subject. But, you know, you'll notice that Abigail only has the one friend, Cassie, and that's because her husband is controlling all of her life, and she's pretty isolated. But then she gets involved in this group of women who are teaching about boundaries. And and there's an older woman there who kind of becomes the mother figure, who teaches about empowerment. And she's very straight on with these women, you know, about what a good boundary really is. And then these women just kind of surround Abigail. There are various times, and one of my favorite times is when they're looking in the mirror, and they're all kind of behind her, and they're encouraging her, and they are there for her. And women particularly need to have a support system, because we are relational people. We are emotional people, and we need to have a good, solid support system. And I believe it's important to have a support system that's not just our age demographic or our particular race demographic or anything like that, but I think it's very vital to have a support system that is, you know, a variety of ages, a variety of demographics to add richness to our lives and to teach us not only about ourselves but about the rest of the world. So that support system gave Abigail courage to actually embrace herself, and they encouraged her to be empowered, and they encouraged her in her own giftings, and they encouraged her to speak because she was at a point where she almost could not speak her own mind. But they encouraged her to speak. And so having a support system, whether it's, you know, whether you go to a pottery class or whether you're involved in a Bible study or whether you volunteer somewhere and you meet other women, it's so important to have that support system that can encourage you, lift you up, teach you, be beside you. And in some cases, for some women, the support system is where you go when you do have to leave. And they will you know, circle around you, kind of circle the wagons, you know. They will circle around you and protect you and help you and enable you to escape and to find a new life. So for the women out there listening who are all alone, the first thing to do is to find some kind of support system, whether it's one person or a group.
Another thing you touched on, because we're getting close to the end of our show here, another thing you touched on is a very real thing about marital rape. And this is a very real thing. And you really, there's nothing explicit in there, so don't worry about it. Well, for our listeners, there's nothing to worry about. There's nothing explicit at all in there. But one thing about Nate, he felt as if she was supposed to give him what he wanted. He did not have to be gentle with her or, you know, seduce her even. He didn't even seduce her, which is lame. I'm sorry, but that's another subject for another time, because my mind starts to wander off. Like, at least, you know, if he, anyway.
Yeah.
So, I almost said something I probably should say. But he didn't seduce her. He felt, in a couple of passages where in his mind, he said he will make women love him. And that's a very telling phrase, because he felt like, I'll make you love me. Again, because he went from being abandoned by his father, and now he felt as if, because again, in the Bible and the church that he grew up, men are supposed to be, you know, supreme and submit and all other kind of stuff, so he can demand it. And so she, and so she'd be like, she would say, I'm not in a mood for it, but he would just take from her. And she didn't know what to think, because aren't you supposed to do this for your husband? Aren't you supposed to give him what he wants? I'm looking like, first of all, bro, you're supposed to seduce me, okay? Especially if I have a headache, especially if I'm not feeling well. If you want anything to happen, you have to seduce me. That is, no, this is not just grab and take. But one thing that happened, and you didn't go too much into it, because there's so much going on in this book. There's so much going on to it. But you touched on it. You said, look, that's rape. If you're not interested, he's forcing, so that's rape. They call it criminal sexual misconduct now, but that's rape, okay? And understanding that could be a freeing aspect to this topic as well, RJ. So go ahead and just give us your thoughts on that.
Yeah, you know, that was an aha for me as well, just as a person, because I was raised in this conservative world, you know, that women are made to give pleasure to men. And so... it is possible to be raped by your husband. And when you say no, that means no. But, you know, men are very usually more physically powerful than women, and they can take advantage. And, you know, how many women are willing to go to their pastor and say, oh, guess what, my husband's raping me? And so when a woman doesn't have a voice, when she feels totally disempowered, almost disemboweled by what he has done to her, and her soul has been killed, you know, then she is basically, he is just prostituting her, and she is basically a nothing. Now, Nate would tell you that he loves his wife. you know, and that he is treating her as a biblical husband would treat a wife. But that's not true. You know, again, the truth is, anytime that you are forcing yourself sexually on anyone, including your spouse, that is sexual assault. And to force yourself like that on your wife, that is rape, and that is wrong. You know, and so for women who are going through that, first of all, admit it. This is the truth. If you are being forced, that is rape. You can call the police.
You know, and the thing is, one of the things that I hope you realize throughout this entire conversation I've had with RJ today is coming out of denial. And it's interesting because I know for myself, what really struck me from personal thing was the boundaries, setting boundaries, because I do tend to take things on, too many projects, too many this, too many that. I want to say yes to everything. And one of the things, and I don't know if you even saw the book, RJ, it was Candid Conversations we did, and one young lady wrote a story about being a people pleaser, and I love people. Oh, I love people. And, you know, people pleasing will wear you out, though, okay, because you just, you want to please everybody. And she said, if I had just learned to be the golden retriever that obeys her master, which is the Lord, as opposed to trying to go to everybody else, I wouldn't be so tired of people pleasing, you know. And so, so for me, the book really touched on boundaries. And I was very convicted, like, you know, you have got to learn to say no, Parker. You have got to learn to say no. And I was doing well this year. I really was. I was saying no to things, and all of a sudden, just yes, flopped out and stopped coming. It just kept flopping out. And this book actually encouraged me to pick up my voice and say, okay, I can't do that right now. I can wait, stuff like that. And so that was one thing that I personally got from it. But in this one, when I was reading about Abigail, especially when it came to, you know, the act of intimacy is supposed to be a very gentle, passionate thing between a man and a wife, you know, and the togetherness and also that kind of stuff. And then he turned it something ugly, and he turned it something difficult, and he didn't even realize it, because again, and it's where the church comes in, that the church says, well, she's your wife. She's beneath you. She's supposed to submit to you. And one thing he said when they were arguing, he goes, I think it was Ephesians he wrote out in the thing, he goes, submit, you know, he goes, submit. And and I wanted to, I mean, there are so many times I just wanted to go through this book and just say, you know what, I was with Cassie, I will bring my bat. If you need me to bring my bat, I will bring my bat, you know. And so there's other good nuggets of information in this book. Like there's a scene in here, because RJ wants to give you not just a good story, but resources for you as well. The scene there is showing you how to get out of a chokehold. The scene there is showing you how to, what you need to do. If you need help, if you're going to make that move to leave, but you know it may not go quite well, what to do. There's even a scene in there for, like, if you mess up, let's say you were trying to stand up and you messed up, there's encouragement for you for that. There's encouragement that at the end of it, guess what? The uncertainty of not having that security, because we're actually out of time here, but one thing that Abigail worried about was security, because Nate did take care of all the bills. He did make all the money. He did do that. And so one thing she was worried was that security. And one thing that she learns, and it's not a spoiler or anything, but she learns that no matter what, I got to stay on my own 2 feet, because it can't continue like this. You know, it can't continue in this vein, and she knew that. So I know some women stay because of security, because, well, I don't have a job. Well, that's what he did. He took all that away from you, so you have to be dependent on him. And once you start to realize that, that's why we're saying a lot of get rid of the denial, get rid of the denial, accept it. I am in a bad relationship. Yeah. Accept that. And then once you begin to accept that, you can move on. And so, RJ, once again.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being with us on this show. Go ahead, though.
You're sure welcome. Yeah, I just wanted to give you one little tip about setting boundaries. You know, if it's difficult to say no, just say, I'll get back with you on that. And then go home and journal through it. Do I really want to do this extra thing? You know, just say, I'll get back with you on that. And so that doesn't hurt anybody's feelings. And that makes it a little bit easier. To, you know, and then gradually you get more empowered to where you can say no. But setting boundaries is so vital for all of us to learn. And thank you so much for the opportunity, Parker. I really appreciate it.
RJ, tell people where they can find you online.
Okay, my website is rjtessman.net. I'm also on Twitter. I'm also on Facebook, and I'm in LinkedIn. So I have a blog that I do weekly. Right now I've been kind of focused on a hope series, but I have, I just finished my 13th book, but some are nonfiction and some are fiction, but I'm on Amazon, I'm on, of course, Kindle, Barnes & Noble, Nook, Kobo, various places like that. But my website is rjtessman.net, and you can follow my blog there.
I have been saying your name wrong the entire evening. I always do this. I'm so sorry, RJ. I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
I mean, years, and I still say it wrong. I'm so sorry. You know what it is? It's the TH. It should
it's
be this
TH.
Way. Just change your
it's
name for me, RJ. Change your name
yeah.
for me.
Yeah. Well, and actually, even people in the family pronounce it differently, so not a problem.
Okay.
Not a problem.
But no, correctly, though.
Yeah, that's right.
RJ, thank you. Thank you for being with us. We are so out of time
sure.
so much. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we were talking to RJ Tessman. She is the author of No Visible Scars, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. Make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy today. One of the things I want to encourage you that if you are in a situation like this, please know, first of all, we are praying for you. Secondly of all, you do not have to stay there. You do not have to stay there. You do not have to stay there. There is nothing that important that you have to remain in that situation. And guess what? The Lord will guide you. The Lord will lead you. And if he has been using the Lord against you, guess what? We're here to tell you today, the Lord is with you, and he will provide for you. So don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Pick up your copy of No Visible Scars by RJ Tessman on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. Thank you so much for joining me for this edition of The Right Stuff. I'm the Queen of Tuesday Nights, Parker J, and you have a wonderful, absolutely glorious, blessed day.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of The Right Stuff. Follow Parker online at ParkerJCole.com. To hear this show and other shows, visit the show archive at therightstuffradio.wordpress.com. We'll be back same time next week, 7 p.m. Eastern Time.